This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
I'm Veronica Belmont.
I'm still Tom Merritt.
Still Tom Merritt to this very day. And this is a show where we talk about and read science fiction and fantasy books.
Is the show where we talk about science fiction and fantasy books. If we were reading them, it'd be kind of quiet and boring.
But it would be peaceful. There'd be that.
Unless we were listening to audiobooks, then you would just hear the audiobook.
We should try that sometime. Just do a group read-in. Where we all just hang out on Google Hangout and read
Google
together.
Google Hangout read-in. That'd be fantastic.
A read-in. Did you ever do those in school? Did you have read-ins?
Everybody just kind of chuckling on the Hangout.
Did you have that when you were a kid?
I feel like yes. Like when I was in elementary school, we had that kind of thing organized by the library.
We had it organized by our elementary school where they would open up the whole gym and we'd have a sleepover overnight.
Oh, wow.
And looking back, this sounds like a terrible idea. To stick a bunch of fifth graders in an elementary school gym.
Now read
until you can't read anymore. And we did. You would stay up all night. You would bring a flashlight. You would bring your sleeping bag, and they would lay out the gym mats, and you would just read all night.
And everybody followed the rules. Nobody tried to start playing baseball or tag.
No, people were pretty good, actually. I mean, they had parent volunteers, so there were parents walking around, and it was a gym.
Were they disciplining you?
So they could see if you were doing something bad, if you were talking.
Get back to reading.
Yeah, and they gave us snacks. I remember there were apples and milk, and it was very nice. People should do more stuff like that.
Let's do that. Let's hold a sword and laser read-in.
But first, let's have the quick burns. So we've got some news from the Wurt Zone. It looks like Roy Dotrice is going to go back and narrate book 4 in the Song of Ice and Fire series, A Feast for Crows, which he did not narrate originally in the audiobook form. Actor John Lee, who did record it, he did a great job, but people were really excited, or really bummed out, actually, that Roy Dotrice was not narrating that book because he did all the other ones, and he also did the fifth book. So I think this is pretty exciting for Roy Dotrice fans.
Yeah, Audible's going to have the audiobook available this week on Thursday, and a CD edition is going to follow in March 2012. You got to feel bad if you're John Lee, though. Everybody's like, what? Did I do such an awful job?
He didn't do an awful job, but the fact of the matter is that Roy Dotrice did the first three books, and then he missed one, and then he came back. So now people are like, they want the whole set. They want the matching set of A Feast for Crows.
I guess you could still get the John Lee version. At least I hope so.
I believe.
In case you really are a John Lee fan.
Maybe
but
not.
Yeah, I know this feeling from doing the whole, Roland Gunslinger series where you get used to one person's way of reading. And then when they switch on you in a series like that, you're like, well, wait a minute. I like the way the other guy made Roland sound or Tyrion in this case or whatever. So.
I can't think of this happening. I can't think of another series where this has happened to me, where an audiobook narrator has changed mid-series.
In a series, everything's been consistent for you?
For so far, yeah, as far as I can remember.
No hard times for Veronica.
But that would be pretty jarring, wouldn't it? To listen.
It is,
these books are so long, and the audiobooks are so long, that to suddenly have a different voice, even if he's great,
Awesome. And Brian Brushwood is a huge fan of Roy Dotrice reading this because he does a lot of audiobooks because of all the travel he does for his shows. And so I know he's going to be super excited about this.
Game on the Twit Network, premiering January 15th, Veronica Belmont and Brian Brushwood.
that Brian Brushman. Rudy Rucker says, I decided that I better write my autobiography before it was too late. What with death and senility closing in. Rudy Rucker, he does have health problems, but keeping a sense of humor up in face of him. He says, I didn't want my auto bio to be overly long or dry. I wanted it to read something like a novel. Unlike an encyclopedia entry, a novel isn't a list of dates and events. A novel is all about characterization and description and conversation about action and vignettes. I wanted to structure my autobiography nested scrolls like that. So there's going to be a tour edition of Rudy Rucker Nested Scrolls, the autobiography of Rudy Rucker, and a limited edition from PS Publishing as well.
Interesting. It's nice to take matters into your own hands.
Yeah, like Rudy Rucker is you know, he's one of the early cyberpunk pioneers. So it's I'm definitely going to try to pick this up. I'm not sure. I don't see a release date in this Boing Boing posting, but maybe I just didn't dig in.
We'll keep our eyes peeled for it.
Yeah, we will.
Now, we all know about Ray Bradbury and his feelings towards technology.
Oh, it's already out.
It's out already.
Yeah, Nested Scrolls is out.
Oh, so cool. Well, you can add it to your list. Yeah, but Ray Bradbury is he's a little crotchety,
More than a little.
He's a little angry.
Yeah.
But Fahrenheit 451 is going to become an ebook now, despite his inclinations to the contrary.
He previously called electronic books things that, quote, smell like burned fuel. Not sure what that meant, other than Fahrenheit 451, burning books. Anyway, the new rights for books pretty much require you to have ebook rights in the contract. And Fahrenheit 451 was up for a new contract. Mr. Bradbury's agent pointed out that he was going to have to include ebook rights if he wanted to continue to publish Fahrenheit 451. And so he finally acquiesced. The power of money got past the power of burnt fuel smell.
Yeah, this quote, as late as last year, Mr. Bradbury remained firmly opposed to the idea of his book appearing as a digital title. I was approached three times during the last year by internet companies wanting to put my books on an electronic reading device, he told the Los Angeles Times in 2010. I said to Yahoo, prick up your ears and go to hell. He also complained about the spread of modern technology. We have too many cell phones. We've got too many internets. We have got to get rid of these machines. We have too many machines now, he said.
Why do you kids with your loud rock music?
You're reading on devices and your internets and your tubes.
Why don't you just do everything the way we've always done it? Yeah. You know, it's kind of disappointing to me that Ray Bradbury is like this, because when you read Fahrenheit 451, you feel like, yeah, this is a fight against censorship. This is a fight for rights and the ability to be educated and knowledgeable. And then his arguments against ebooks are so ignorant.
It's just weird. I mean, he's a genius, but it's also a very strange point of view for a science fiction writer.
Well, he's stuck in his ways. I feel like he's definitely not an idiot. When I call him ignorant, I mean it in the very literal sense. Like he does not acknowledge the value to education of things like ebooks and the internet and cell phones. You know, he just dismisses them as absolutely useless because he just, you know what? He likes things the way they used to be. And it's a knee-jerk reaction. But yeah, I mean, the guy is incredibly intelligent. I don't mean to diminish that.
The good old days. He longs for the good old days.
Yeah, exactly. Right, I still like Ray Bradbury's writing.
And I really like the song. Never mind. I won't go into the song.
What song? What are you talking about?
You don't know the song? The Ray Bradbury song?
No. Why don't I know the song?
Really? There's a YouTube personality that did a song about Ray Bradbury. And I can't say the title because it has a very bad swear word in it.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Please have sex with me, Ray Bradbury.
Ray Bradbury in this situation.
If you replace please have sex with me, or please have sex me, Ray Bradbury, you'll get the title of the song.
He probably has never heard that song.
I'm pretty sure he has.
And?
I'm not sure based on experience. It was a huge song on the internet, and someone must have shown it to him.
Molly Lewis was so much more tasteful with her Stephen Fry song.
Oh, but this song is pretty good. I mean, I love the Stephen Fry song, but this song is pretty hilarious. But anyway, let's move on to the calendar. Up on December 14th, we have Rise of Empire, the Rieria Revelations by Michael J. Sullivan. I think I can say that better. Rise of Empire. Rieria. Gosh, I can't say that word.
Rieria
Revelations. The Rieria Revelations by Michael J. Sullivan. Royce and Hadrian have been called upon to aid the struggling kingdom of Melengar as it stands alone in defiance against the newly formed empire. As war approaches, a desperate gamble behind enemy lines is their only chance at forming an alliance with the nationalists to the south.
December 20th, 2011, The Coldest War by Woo-hoo! Ian Tregellis. That's only 8 days away from tonight when we're recording this. Comes out on Audible. Don't forget the actual publication, the print book that Ray Bradbury wants isn't coming out till next summer, but you can get the Audible release December 20th. It's the sequel to Bitter Seeds, which we read here on Sword and Laser. It tells the tale of wizards and supermen after the war, World War II, and divided between the communist bloc and the democracy. So, of course, Coldest War. It's the Cold War version of the Bitter Seeds.
I can't wait. I'm so excited. I wonder if I can
see it. I know. Yeah, me too.
That's going to be my next listen if I ever finish 1Q84.
I'm over halfway.
I did nothing. I did no listening the entire trip.
Traveling.
I read. Okay. I finished Elantris.
Oh, well, see, now that's the I haven't finished Elantris because yeah.
And then on the 27th, Kurt Vonnegut, The Last Interview and Other Conversations, one of the great American iconoclasts, holds forth on politics, war, books, and writers, and his personal life in a series of interviews, including his last for, oddly, U.S. Airways Magazine.
Yeah, you just never know.
You
which
never know what's
going to
be
your
the last one. It could be could be anything. It could be Reader's Digest. It could be the New York Times. You don't know.
Yep.
You don't
could
know.
Could be Sword and Laser.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I found a great new resource for book release dates, by the way.
Oh, good. Yeah. No, I want to thank everybody, well, mostly Maggie, who has contributed a bunch of release dates on our thread on Goodreads. That was extremely helpful. Thank you.
Excellent. Yeah, sfsite.com has a lot of good. It seems to be, it's sci-fi and fantasy. They've got a lot of good stuff. So that's one
I
to
have
check out
that,
and keep our
actually.
Eyes on. That's
what,
in your list.
Yeah, I have that in my list. I look at IO9. I look at sfsite. I look at bestsellers.about.com. I look at Barnes & Noble, and thanks to one emailer, I look at Fantasy Book Critic as well.
Very cool. All right, well, now it's time to thank one of our sponsors. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. Now, Tom, I know that you are, as you mentioned, halfway through 1Q84. I'm still at about the same point that I left off at during the last show, which is I'm done. I'm about halfway through the second book. So I've got a ways to go for sure, but that's still, I think, one of our top recommendations for this time period.
Yeah, the more I listen to this, the more I absolutely love the narration. So you get a free audiobook if you sign up for Audible at audiblepodcast.com/sword. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, 1Q84, not a bad book to start with. Haruki Murakami, it's our alternate pick right now, but read by Alison Hiroto and Mark Vitor, and Mark Boyette. Now, I haven't got to the part that Mark Boyette reads.
Oh,
but
a new character, huh?
I don't know. I have no spoilers, because I don't know why that happens. I have my guesses. But right now, from the very beginning, Alison Hiroto reads the parts by Aomame, and Mark Vitor reads the chapters that are about Tengo. Mm-hmm. And so they alternate every other chapter. Is Allison and Mark, and they both do a fantastic job. I love Allison's way of reading that really captures Aomame's sort of devil, like, nah, I don't really, you know, just not, she's not dismissive or goth or, you know, overly dramatic, just, you know, everything's fine. I, you know, so I kill some people, whatever.
Spoilers.
Yeah, well, that is a little bit of a spoiler, I guess, isn't it? But and Mark Vidor has a great a feel for Tengo as well. So the back and forth between the two are just absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. That is one book that you could get at audible.com. But whatever book, maybe you want to wait for The Coldest War by Ian Tregellis.
It's going to be my next get
in a
sure.
week. You could do that one as well. audiblepodcast.com/sword. You can get it for free. And if you're already an Audible subscriber, give the gift of telling someone about a URL this holiday season and just tell them, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword, sign up, get a free audiobook.
Nice. All right. Well, now it's time for Barrier Sword, which is our feedback from the audience. So the first topic that I wanted to discuss, this is about Elantris, or Elantris. It's by Joshua, and his title was, Anyone Else Feel Guilty? I was thinking about Shu Dereth earlier today. It's a perfect religious bias litmus test. At first, Shu Dereth reminded me of Islam, and I immediately felt guilty for such a stereotyped thought. After a bit of memory jogging, it reminds me of the local televangelist. Got me wondering if it touched off anyone else's dirty little stereotypes. Would Shu Dereth remind Jews of Muslims, Muslims of Catholics, or a cargo cult member of evangelicals?
Yeah, this kicked off a really good discussion about what's going on here. And I have to say, I believe, and it'd be interesting to ask Brandon Sanderson this, but I believe right off the top that Shu Dereth and I don't want to get them wrong, so I'm not going to say the other two Shu Dashes are obviously a parallel to Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. The only difference is here we have a triangle, right? You have two Shu Dash religions coming off from a parent religion, whereas in the people of the book, as they sometimes say, you have Judaism leads to Christianity, leads to Islam. And each one thinks that they are the one that is true, and the previous two just haven't quite caught up. And instead, you have this interesting thing that Brandon Sanderson set up, where you have Shu Dereth and the Shu K one. I wish I could remember it now off the top of my head.
Shu Karathi
that are going against each other to be the heir of the original religion, and so it's a slightly different take on it, but I think you're meant to compare it to Judaism, Christianity, and Islam.
But it's kind of hard because it's like which is which, though, because there were some good points.
I don't think they match up that way.
You don't think they match up that way?
No, I don't think it's a one for one. It's just sort of like they're all. Even, you know, they all try to convert people. They all think they are the proper interpretation. And so I think when you look at Shu Dereth, if you think, oh, that has to be Islam, you might want it. There's Christianity in the Middle Ages, very much like that. A lot of fundamentalist Christianity still mm-hmm. like that. So I don't think it's meant to be any particular one.
I think that Torah had some good points in this thread. She said, the primary feature of the Dorethi religion is its hierarchy, and much is made of the three monasteries. Islam has no hierarchy and no monasteries. Those are quite clearly taken from Catholicism. Ditto Wern being like the Pope. Also, Harathan wearing armor and his training in fighting suggests a strongly military outlook, and there is no official military orders in Islam, unlike the medieval Catholic Church, which had quite a number of them, including the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, which still exists today, the Knights Templar, and the Teutonic Knights. While the Dorethi desire to unify the world under their religion, which resembles the Islamic Jihad, it's also not far off from Catholic behavior in the New World and their convert or die policy for the Native Americans, and also kind of like the Crusades, which is my point. Meanwhile, the darker, lighter skin could map to Southern Europe, which was strongly Catholic, and Northern Europe, which was mostly Protestant, though admittedly that's North-South versus East-West. Overall, it seems to me that Dorethi maps far more closely to the Catholic... Wait. Overall, it seems to me that Dorethi maps far more closely to the medieval Catholic Church than it does to Islam.
And in fact, I think the whole thing maps very closely to medieval religion.
In general,
Islam
yeah.
did have hierarchies at certain points in its history, and it had military organizations at certain points in its history, but not to the extent that Catholicism had. And in some ways, Shu Dereth is more similar because they are using religion as their army instead of using an army, whereas Catholicism actually employed armies sort of indirectly with the Crusades. But frankly, Judaism had all the same stuff long before both of them. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean. It just seems to be sort of a loose parallel of, you know what, we have these three religions in our world that one leads from another, and they all follow similar pursuits with different strategies. So I think what Sanderson said was, you know what, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to have three religions, and one of them is going to, you know, be trying to convert everyone. They all have at
Chip,
some point.
Chip kind of makes an interesting point that I kind of is kind of my feelings on the matter. He says, not being religious myself, the big bad Dorethes reminded me of any religion whose adherents are convinced they are right and all others will be damned. The Carathis reminded me of tolerant live and let live types. I didn't see any linkage to real world religions, but I think the reader's mind may fill in the blanks.
I felt like the Carathis are just sort of old fashioned and have, you know, they aren't as new, maybe. And so they just sort of gave up. And in that way, I think that's probably why Joshua immediately thought of Islam versus Christianity, because Christianity being older is not as intense overall in the world as Islam is seen to be. That's not to say that Christianity doesn't have its intense adherents in many parts of the world, mm-hmm. But Islam is still a younger religion. And I feel like, and I don't know if this is right, but I feel like Shudareth feels like the younger religion.
Well, it is in the story as well.
Yeah, and I don't. Okay, so it is.
Yeah,
I'm not just picking that out of nowhere. And so it's going to feel like that in some ways. But yeah, I don't think there's a direct parallel between Shudareth and Islam.
Well, I think if I remember correctly,
than the maybe the broadest sense,
they both came out of the same root religion.
Yeah.
And but then the monks of Shudareth rewrote kind of their history.
Yeah,
in
and
certain
so that,
ways
that's a good parallel
to make it seem older than it actually was.
And I think Torah has a really good point saying that you can look at Shudareth and look at medieval Catholicism and draw very direct parallels.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be a result of Sanderson just having more familiarity with medieval Catholicism than anything else, and so he'll pull on that. But I don't think it's supposed to be one to one to anything. Really.
And I don't think it's wrong to make parallels, though.
No,
I don't think
so either.
You know, he was the OP was concerned about, you know, feeling guilty about making these kinds of parallels, but that's what writing is. You know, that's what we do when we read, is we build these bridges in our minds. We make these connections. It's all part of critical reading. That's why we have these kinds of discussions.
And that's what people do when they write, too.
Right.
Yeah. You know, they're thinking like, oh, what if it was like this thing that I already know?
It's very hard to make something completely up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, it really is.
You always have some kind of stereotype or some kind of bias or some kind of idea in your mind of how things should be. So it's you know, it's bound to happen.
Yeah.
There's another thread about Elantris by Kevon, K-V-O-N. They say they want to know what your favorite point of view is. Whose point of view in the book did you enjoy the most? A couple of folks have mentioned not liking two of the three main characters. So which sections do people like best? I'll stick up for my man, Raiden, because I like seeing civilization reborn. Who doesn't? What was your favorite point of view?
You know, it's funny, actually. I prefer Raiden's point of view as well, mm-hmm. because that story in Elantris I find more interesting because of it's so different, and I'm probably only about 50% through Elantris at this point. I know you did. I'm still in that mystery of like, what's he doing? Where's he going with this? And I'm enjoying that a lot. I don't dislike. I've seen a lot of discussion about this where people are saying they dislike particular parts of the book, and I actually like Serene a lot. I think she's spunky. I think she's great. I know she grates on a lot of people.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll change my mind by the end of the book. I think she's fantastic. And I think Raiden is a very interesting character as well as the Gjorn. I find him probably the least enjoyable just because I feel like I kind of know what he's going to do at any given moment.
Really?
He doesn't surprise me as much.
I find him to be a little more complex.
He's a complex character, but I've seen that complex character before, so he never surprises me.
Well, that's how I feel about Serene, or however
you say her name.
I find her to be, she's okay, but I find her to be very predictable. Like, you can always say, she's going to have a stick up her butt, and she's going to, like, give him a hard time. And she's
like her, though.
It was funny. Someone mentioned that they liked it when she trolled Raiden. And I thought that was pretty funny when he was giving the sermon.
Yeah, she totally did.
She trolled him. She's like, "You mad?" It was one of my favorite moments in the book. But I enjoyed his point of view very much, probably second to Raiden. And his character gets more interesting as the book goes on, for sure, and definitely much more conflicted.
Well, maybe I'll like him more.
Yeah, give it some more time. You know, opinions change as the books go on, for sure.
And I'm certainly not saying I dislike Raiden at all. I like all three characters myself.
Mm-hmm. And then also today we have a thread about units of measure in fantasy. And this one was started by Mike. And I pulled this one out because I had this issue recently where I was writing my book for NaNoWriMo. Uh-huh. And, well, let me read what he said. Fantasy authors often make up their own units of measure for their worlds or use units that have fallen out of current use, like leagues, stones, etc. What do you think of this practice? Would it seem weird to read a fantasy novel that used kilograms and kilometers? What about hours and minutes? Are miles better than kilometers? Why or why not?
I think that's a great question. And it actually reminds me of the question of swearing in Patrick Rothfuss's novels.
Yeah, very true.
Because at the one side, you say, well, if they say kilometers, it takes me out of the fantasy because it's too familiar. But on the other hand, it's sort of like, well, this is a translation. They're also not speaking whatever weird language they speak in that world. Mm-hmm. They're speaking English. So why not translate it to kilometers? That's what you would do in the real world. Mm-hmm. So I'm of two minds. Part of me is like, it would jar me because nobody does it. And I think that's why people use stone and sort of older leagues, things like that, because then they're real and you can say, oh, that's how far that is. You can look it up, but it doesn't seem so familiar that it makes it feel too modern.
I wish I had done something for that for my book, because I had a real hard time with doing time and distance.
Mm-hmm.
That was one thing that I kept coming back to. And I feel like I should have figured that out before I started writing.
You could just avoid.
I kind of got halfway through. I did mostly avoid it.
Yeah, you can just avoid the question. That's what I do with stuff like that. I'm just like, I will just call it far.
Well, my problem was mostly not saying like, oh, they had to be there by 8 o'clock.
Yeah,
it was like 2 hours later they did this.
Yeah,
and that was hard.
Hours are probably okay because
you're
telling the reader it was 2 hours. That might only be one quablop in your world, but
a what now?
Or whatever, you
a
know.
A quablob?
Quablop.
Quablop? Define : quablob.
That's 2 hours.
Approximately 2 hours. Oh, that's funny.
You know, not the NaNoWriMo this year, but the one I wrote last year took place in another solar system. And I basically just had to abandon all of those kinds of things and just punt and be like, they took, you know, the next day, even though it's not a day, you never say how long the day is, but there, you know, there's going to be some division that's equivalent to a day because they're humans. If they aren't humans, then it gets even more complicated. But I'm okay with that sort of thing if they just ignore it, because I don't need to know. But it causes a problem when you start to define it, because then you're like, well, wait a minute, how long is a quablop? And how many quablops are in a blorgun?
Well, this is what kind of what Tassie Dave gets into. He says, I would rather the author used units that are used today, metric or imperial, instead of a made-up system. I don't want to make conversions. In some cases, the structure of the world may necessitate made-up systems. For example, alien worlds wouldn't have time periods that mirrored our Earth-based time measurements.
Right.
As far as which system is best, I find that the imperial system works best for fantasy, and the metric system works best for sci-fi. I would find metric measurements in historical fantasy out of place, and I find imperial measurements in a futuristic setting that just doesn't seem right. The weight unit of a stone is still in current use and is a precise weight. It's 14 pounds. A lot of older Australians still use imperial measurements instead of or as well as the metric system. Apparently, I think he's Australian. We rarely use the American standard of referring to our weight in pounds only. Someone who is 200 pounds here would have, and some still do, refer to their weight in imperial units as 14 stone, 4 pounds.
Yeah, I hear that in rugby a lot when they talk about the weight of rugby players. I think that's brilliant. Yeah, I think he hit on it. Kilometers and meters, because they're relatively new, sound futuristic. So that works. But if you're doing a fantasy and you want it to sound kind of medieval, which a lot of fantasy does, then you want to use imperial measurements or even more outdated measurements like leagues that aren't even used, but we know what they are. I just wish the United States would actually start using the metric system.
Well, that's probably one of never going to happen.
Three countries in the world. Three.
Yeah, we're nerds. I mean, anti-nerd or something. I don't know. Yeah. Let's talk about TV shows, video games, and movies, huh?
Let's do. Westeros Total War needs your help. This comes from the Wirt Zone. Adam Wirt back and blogging again. It says, Westeros Total War is a fan-made conversion of Medieval 2 Total War.
Did you just call him Adam Wirt?
I did.
Adam Whitehead.
I don't know why I did that.
It's probably the old Adam Wirt.
It's the brandy talking. I apologize, Adam. Westeros Total War is a mod, essentially, of Medieval 2 Total War that allows players to conquer the Seven Kingdoms with the faction of their choice. And it's making some serious inroads towards completion, but it's fan-made, so they need some help. If you're a coder or a skinner or a modeler and you want to kick in, check out the TW Center forum at twcenter.net. Or you can just go to the wortzone.blogspot.com. He's got the link there and to see what is needed. And hopefully sometime in the next year, we can start combating for the Iron Throne.
Very cool. Speaking of the Iron Throne, we have the Game of Thrones Season 2 trailer up at last. And this one is narrated by Stephen Delane, who, of course, is playing Stannis Baratheon. And the video is up. It's super cool. He sounds like a total freak show. Just
and
like
he
creepy,
is.
Creepy, yeah. Like really. I can tell you
I mean,
he
not
said.
Stephen Delane, but Stannis Baratheon is a total
My
freak.
My brother show. Left no true-born heirs. By right and birth and blood, I do this day lay claim to the Iron Throne of Westeros. Let all true men declare their loyalty. The Iron Throne is mine by right. They will bend the knee, or I will destroy them. The cold winds are rising.
Or winter is coming is really the way you would...
Stannis Baratheon is coming.
Stannis is coming.
Stannis is coming. The Stannis is coming.
Yeah, you know, I know there's some of you out there not as excited about the Game of Thrones TV show, but just get used to it because we're going to keep talking about
it. Yeah, it's going to come back. It's ramping up again. So it's going to happen eventually. We'll probably return to our typical Game of Thrones post-show talk.
This week in Game of Thrones.
This week in Game of Thrones. Hey, we can totally do that.
We should. We
both
totally
work for
should
Twit.
Do
we should do this week in Game of Thrones.
I love it.
Wait,
Let's
but that's
it.
This show. Wait. Darn
that
it.
Will, that
Are we
would
be competing against our own show?
I don't believe in compete. I don't believe that's possible.
Okay. Anyway. Yeah, just more content. It's more content for the people who enjoy reading and listening about that stuff.
Putting more things out is never a bad thing.
Exactly. So tell me about these Lost Doctor Who episodes. I actually saw this bouncing around on Twitter a lot today.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that I think upwards of 30-some episodes, actually it's more than that, it's 100 episodes of Doctor Who went missing in the 1960s. They didn't realize that Doctor Who was going to become the huge icon that it became, and they did not preserve all the episodes in the library at the BBC. So many of the William Hartnell and Patrick Troughton episodes were lost. Some of them have been recovered here and there for in various ways. And recently, two more episodes from the 1960s have been found. Terry Burnett, a former television engineer, bought the recordings at a school festival in Hampshire, England. Both episodes were segments from four-part stories. Airlock was the third installment in the 1965 Galaxy 4 featuring William Hartnell. And the other episode was episode 2 of The Underwater Menace with Patrick Troughton. Burnett was not aware that the episodes were missing. But now that they've been recovered, it's a huge announcement. And the BBC had a big event where they showed the episodes. And the BBC now reports that 106 installments between 1964 and 1969 remain missing, but two more have been found, so there's hope for the rest.
I had seen an article, and I actually clicked on it, and the link didn't work, but someone told me on Twitter that some Doctor Who episodes that were broadcast have bounced around in space the way that TV signals do,
yeah,
and have come back.
Wow.
Like they've bounced back. Somehow?
That's weird.
And so they might be able to, like, this is only, I'm basically reiterating a tweet that I saw. Like, I didn't even click the link because it wouldn't work.
Yeah, I want some verification on that, but I want to believe it's true.
I want to follow through on that and try to find. That's what I thought this article was going to be. And I was like, oh, exciting. I get to read this thing that I saw on Twitter today. But it wasn't the same one.
Yeah, if you go to the BBC, they actually have some of the first season of episodes available as recreations based on the audio, because people had recorded them on audio tape in the 60s, but there was no video. So they've actually animated them to make it look like what it would have looked like. It's pretty interesting what they've done to try to reconstruct these early episodes.
Well, I just typed in Doctor Who space into the Google News search and nothing came back from the past week that makes any sense to what I saw today.
Well, maybe somebody in the audience knows and you can put it up on Goodreads or email us, theswordandlaser@gmail.com.
That would be awesome. Quick book check-in. So, of course, you are halfway through and I am complete with Elantris. So I guess we can't really talk about it much because you're not done yet.
Yeah, all I'll say is I see what people have said about the raw writing style of Brandon Sanderson because this is his early book. There are definitely some parts where it's not cringeworthy by any stretch. He's a good writer. Mm-hmm. I see some of the structure. I kind of feel like I'm seeing some of the scaffolding in places. Mm-hmm. But I really am enjoying, I mean, we talked about a lot about, you know, liking Raiden. I really am enjoying the concept of Elantris. I'm really curious to see where it goes and what's happening and if we get any resolution to the problem with the Elantrians. And I think you created a compelling world that I'm interested in reading about.
Yeah. No, I stick to my earlier sentiments about it still feeling very first novel-y. Which still feels very judgy to say, but it does. And I don't think I've ever felt that way about a book.
Yeah.
And I'm still not entirely sure if it's because I know that it's his first novel or because I would actually think that had I not known that. But like you, I feel like there's a lot of things that are a little obvious, maybe a little bit simplistic. But I think overall the book really grabbed me towards the end. And I started to get really excited to read and find out what was going to happen next. Mm-hmm. So if you feel like it's slogging along a little bit and you're not too into it, keep going. Keep moving with it because it picks up. And there's some pretty great scenes and pretty great moments that I think you guys are going to enjoy.
As far as 1Q84 goes, I think Murakami is a genius. And I've read Murakami before and not enjoyed him as much as this. I've enjoyed him before, but it was always sort of a somewhat distant enjoyment. Mm-hmm. Where I felt like, okay, that was really good and I enjoyed it and I understand and appreciate what it was, but I wasn't dying to go read the next Murakami book. This, I think it's like an orchestra. He does such an amazing job in 1Q84 of indicating exactly where you're going. You know what's going to happen with Aomami and Tengo. You feel it. And he just brings it about so elegantly and slowly that when you finally get to that point where the thing that you were anticipating happens, it feels like a ballet rather than a big revelation. He holds back from the typical thing, which is to like misdirect you and keep you from expecting it. And just says, no, that's you know what's gonna happen here. You know what's gonna happen here, and then just softly it happens and all, but you're never bored by it because there's always something else.
You think? Because I've gotten kind of bored in some parts.
Now,
I felt like it's been taken a little too long to get to certain places.
I realize that he over explains, like he has a device where he will rewrite essentially the same thing that he's written before and explain it to you as if you've never heard it before. Even though it's exactly what
I find that very irritating.
Yeah, and that, I can see where that irritates some people. I actually appreciate it because my memory is not as good as it used to be. So, and I'm listening to it on audiobook, and I'm like, oh yeah, okay, that catches me up. But I like that slow. I feel like I'm watching it in slow motion, and I think it's elegantly done. But yeah, maybe it doesn't work for everybody.
All right, well, we've got until January 2nd to finish up Elantris and no end date for 1Q84 because it's super long and it's not our main pick. So keep reading Elantris and keep discussing it over on Goodreads. We've got some really great discussions going on over there.
Since the last time we did a Sworded Laser, NaNoWriMo has ended, and we both won.
We did. Yay.
Congrats to us and everybody else. Lots of people in the audience also won. So congrats to you as well.
Yay. My book is not done. It's I won by getting
You got your 50,000 words, but you didn't finish your story.
It's almost done. I still need to get, now I need like impetus to get it done. It's so close. I feel like I have to.
Get it done.
Get her done.
We're going to ask you every episode. Have you finished?
Oh, geez. Well, maybe when I'm home for Christmas, I'll have some time.
I actually had to stretch.
Really?
I was afraid I was going to finish before 50,000 words. It ended up being like 50,046 or something.
Oh,
like,
I have 50,047 or 49. Yeah.
But I ended the story.
Oh, like, your book. Okay.
Nailed the point. It's and it was just a silly story this time. So I don't know. I think I don't love this one as much as I have loved the other two. That I have won.
It's not your favorite child. It's not the chosen one.
It's which is ridiculous because it's about my dogs. fighting crime and solving mysteries. But yeah, I don't think I had enough of an idea to really push it and carry it through. I was not sitting down in those last 2 weeks, like, you know, excited to see what the characters were going to do next as much as I have in the past. But I got it. I did it. So two years in a row. First time I've ever done back-to-back.
Congrats. Well, I'm very excited. Actually, Patrick Rothfuss mentioned me in his blog post about NaNoWriMo.
Oh, cool.
As like an example of someone who did it right. She wrote every day. Her little timeline graph went up in a nice sharp angle.
Yeah.
And he didn't quite complete it, his own, but he did start writing, or he did work on book three.
That's
of
great.
The Painkiller Chronicles, so that's exciting.
That was his NaNoWriMo was book three?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
So that's pretty awesome. I didn't think he was going to finish it in that time.
No, of course not. But that's
great. It was cool. Yeah, he's great, and I'm happy that he participated and let people know about NaNoWriMo too, because he's got so many people reading his blog. So that's exciting.
Are you going to do it again next year, you think?
I hope so. I hope I do. I think if you and Josh do, I will.
I'm game. I'll do it again.
All right, cool. Yeah, I think it was fun. It was definitely kind of stressful, but it was fun overall.
Yeah, it hurt my back.
It hurt your back, did it? From
to
sitting?
Sit right for that long every night.
It's not that long. It's like an hour. What, you don't play Warcraft for an hour?
Yeah, but I slump when I play Warcraft.
Oh, okay. So a different kind of sitting.
Yeah.
All right, well, we've got some emails tonight. We have one from Wilton. He writes, "Hello, Tom and Veronica. I've been a longtime listener to Framerate on the Twit Network and have only been listening to The Sword and Laser, episode number 82 to be exact. Both this and the later episode have been enjoyable to listen to, whilst on long plane journeys and idle time while building booths at trade shows. I must admit that I finished Elantris' book in a few days and agree with Veronica when she stated this has a first book feel to it. Towards the end, I found Serene to be slightly grating and almost put the book down, but I'm glad I pushed through the last 20 pages or so. I was wondering if you had a few seconds to answer a question, so I may learn from people possessing greater knowledge than I. I find myself with a 2-week break over Christmas, and I was wondering if you could suggest any major series that I could start getting into. I have never read The Mistborn, The Way of Kings, or Game of Thrones series, but really enjoyed the Dark Tower books. I think you just answered your own question.
Yeah, start with Game of Thrones, then Mistborn, then Way of Kings.
Oh, yeah, or you can go, Kingkiller Chronicles and start with those.
Yeah, I'm just talking about the ones he mentioned. You're right, actually, Kingkiller Chronicles, absolutely fantastic. The Dune series, if you haven't read it, is a big favorite of mine.
Mm-hmm. The Dresden Files.
Yeah, that's another
great
one.
That's a major series. I mean, he's coming out with book 14 soon.
What's Joe Abercrombie's series name? First Law Trilogy.
The First Law Trilogy is excellent, and all the other books in that series. The new one, The Red Country, is coming out next year as well. What else we got? Anything by, you know, for me, it's anything by Tad Williams. So the Otherland series, if you want something, no, you don't want standalone. The Dragonbone Chair, the Memory, Sorrow, and Thorn series that starts with the Dragonbone Chair. That's also Tad Williams. Anything by Robin Hobb, I would say anything Robin Hobb wise, I would go with the Assassin's Apprentice series. That's not the name of the trilogy though, but it starts with the book The Assassin's Apprentice. And that there's three books there, and then they have the Tawny Man trilogy, and then there's the Live Ship Traders trilogy. So there's actually three trilogies that she wrote.
A trilogy of trilogies.
All very good. And yeah, there's so much. There's so much out there. You could do the Dragon Riders of Pern and all the Anne McCaffrey books. You could do the Sword of Shannara. You could do
Wilton
all
doesn't
the
have that long
Scott
of a holiday
Card.
Break, Veronica.
I mean, there's I could go on forever, basically. Any regular listener will know that if there's one thing I like, it's epic series.
Yeah.
So there you go, Wilton. Have a good 2 weeks.
Hope that helps you out. Dr. Timothy R. wrote in and said, did you guys see this? A grad student of mine sent me the links, and I thought Tom in particular might enjoy it. It's homeonthestrange.com, a webcomic, and the two links that he sent to us are of a Doctor Who fan being confronted by an evangelical Christian, he decides, just kind of on the spur of the moment, to say that Doctor Who is his religion. And they have a rather entertaining back and forth about the relative merits of Christianity versus Doctor Whoism. I could see this might offend some people, but if you have a sense of humor about your religion or if you're not even Christian, I think it's pretty funny.
Very cool. And then we had a note from Scott, and he says, hey, Veronica and Tom, I wanted to reach out to you guys and let you know about our e-zine flagship. Every other month, for the last 15 months, we put out an anthology of positive science fiction and fantasy short stories in both electronic text and audio formats. We were recently featured in Wired's magazine Geek Dad blog, which is a great blog, and we're looking for more places to get the word out about what we're doing. So yeah, that sounds really cool. I want to check that out. Flagship.
Yes. Flagship. Now he gives us the link to the flagship story at Wired, but I don't know if he gave us the link to.
Yeah, I can't find
it. Where you can subscribe to his e-zine.
Maybe
Flying Island Press is the name. Oh, if you go to flyingislandpress.com, that's the place to go and look up Flagship. In fact, if you go to flyingislandpress.com/flagship/subscribe. That takes you right there.
Very cool. Good stuff. Yeah, I love the Geek Dad blog. It's a great collection of stuff. And then we had a call from, I think he says John. He's either saying John or Tom, so I apologize in advance, John Tom. But he wants to talk about Lev Grossman. Take a listen.
Hey, Tom and Veronica. My name's Dom. I've been a long-time listener since episode one. And anyway, I've been meaning to call for a few weeks, but just haven't got around to it. Anyway, I remember a few episodes ago, Tom was asking for suggestions for maybe getting some guests on the show for interviews, and he was also talking about reading The Magicians, I believe, by Lev Grossman. And I thought, Lev Grossman, and I don't know if you know, but he also has a brother whose name is Austin Grossman that is also an author. He wrote a really good book called Someday I Will Become Invincible, I think it's called. And I'm not sure what genre it is. It might be sci-fi. Definitely not fantasy. But anyway, I thought it'd be kind of cool to get the two brothers that are both authors as guests for interviews. Anyway, keep up the good work. Thanks a lot.
Now, obviously we'd love to have Lev Grossman on the show. So Lev, if you're listening or anyone who knows him, come be on our show.
Yes.
But I didn't know as much about Austin Grossman writing the book Soon I Will Be Invincible. That's
yes,
cool.
The book is called Soon I Will Be Invincible. And he also, according to his Wikipedia page, worked at Crystal Dynamics, which is a game company. Mm. So I thought that was kind of cool. Actually, there's no Wikipedia page for Soon I Will Be Invincible. Oh, I think I plugged it in wrong. Hold on a second. I want to go look at his Wikipedia page so I can tell you exactly what he worked on in the past. Austin Grossman. Grossman started his career in the game industry, replying to a classified ad in the Boston Globe in May 1992 that led him to Looking Glass Studios. Since then, Grossman has worked with the following companies: DreamWorks Interactive, Ion Storm of Austin, and Crystal Dynamics.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Grossman, born in Concord, Massachusetts. He went to Harvard University. Yeah, they have a very interesting family. He's the twin brother of Lev Grossman. Their brother, Bathsheba, is a sculptor. and their parents were poets and novelists. So it sounds like a very, very cool family. I want to see what games Crystal Dynamics has come out with that you guys would probably recognize. They've come out with some pretty good ones. Most recently, the Tomb Raider series is probably the most well-known one. They did Tomb Raider Underworld, Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light. I went to Crystal Dynamics has a studio out here in the Bay Area, and I actually visited their studios for Core a few months ago, probably last year, actually. But yeah, cool. I thought it was pretty cool. Very interesting family. All right, so now it's time for some new member hellos. I will start. We've got Chris, also known as Cognator X.
Harm.
Kieran.
Tim.
Erg.
Dave.
Emma.
Brandon.
Armando.
Kristen.
William.
Darren.
Michael.
Marissa.
Joe.
John.
Quinn.
Chris.
Dana.
Steven.
Diego.
Brandon again.
Jonathan.
Chris.
Alex.
Ruth.
Sean.
Rob.
Melissa.
Patrick.
Dirk.
Link.
Leslie.
Tom.
Peter.
Amanda.
Mel.
Trey.
Harry.
Bob.
McKay.
Kelly.
Jack.
Charles.
Gary.
Glenn.
Code Red.
Brian.
And Jonathan. Welcome. Welcome to Goodreads. Welcome to the forums. And welcome to the show.
Missed a couple episodes. You get a lot of new member hellos.
We only missed one episode, didn't we?
I think so.
Yeah, only one episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get off my lawn.
Ray Bradbury. Yeah. Ray Bradbury. I'm the new John Dvorak.
I'm Ray C. Dvorak.
Ray C. Dvorak. Oh, inside baseball. All right. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address, as always, is theswordandlaser@gmail.com. The web address is swordandlaser.com. And all our discussion happens over on Goodreads. And if you want to call, like John Tom, and leave us a message, the phone number is 415-779-6735. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.